Views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Thank you very much, Wendy, and welcome back. You're listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. Joining me in the studio are Colin Brown and Rob Washburn, and we're going to get right to our conversation. Our conversation today is about political engagement. Before we do that, here's Bob Marley.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. Is that all that Peter is told? After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Sky, take away everything and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you would look for yours unhurt. And now you see the light, you stand up for your rights. Yeah.
Get up, stand up,
jab, jab.
Stand up for your rights.
Sick and tired of your ism, schism, game, dine and go to heaven in a Jesus' name, Lord. We know and we understand, Almighty God is a living man. You can fool some people sometimes, but you can't fool all the people all the time. So now we see the light.
What you gonna
we
do?
Gonna stand up for
yeah,
a ride.
Right. Yeah,
so
yeah.
You better
get
up.
Bob Marley, Get Up, Stand Up from 1975, just as relevant today as it was then. It's actually kind of ironic to me. It's 40 years ago that we were singing this, and we're still basically hoping for the same thing. My guests are Colin Brown and Rob Washburn. Rob, welcome back to the studio.
Thank you very much, Dave. Good
and
to see you.
Colin, man, I tell you, the last time we had you in here, we got a couple of good calls on there as well, so thank you very much. You may remember Colin from the last time we were here. We were talking about the politics of race. Today we're going to be talking about political engagement. What does that mean, first of all? What does that mean for you, Colin, political engagement?
Well, for those who don't know what I do, I'm a lawyer in town, but I did my undergraduate degree in political science. So I have some papers to suggest that I have studied politics to a certain extent. But the first thing that I learned when I took my first political science class was that politics is really the study of conflict. It's the study of situations where people aren't agreeing and they have to negotiate things. And that applies to every part of your life. So the thing that fascinates me is that people believe, a lot of people, that politics only has to do with getting elected and sort of governmental stuff, and it doesn't have anything to do with them. Well, it does. Politics and governmental politics and the laws have something to do with everybody, and as a point, it's just important for everybody to realize that and for everybody to get politically engaged. Everybody.
Exactly.
That's my position.
Well, that's what we try and do here every day, as you know, listeners, here at Northumberland 89.7 on the Drive Time. I started using the phrase holistic political conversation, and I got that from an author. He was talking about, you know, holistic. He was a holistic private investigator because he believed in the interconnectedness of all things, and that's how he solved his crimes. But I came to the realization that politics, as you just said a moment ago, affects every aspect of our lives. It is a holistic experience. If you discuss things from a political perspective, because politics does affect everything. There really is an interconnectedness between all things political, whether it's, you know, we talked just before the show here, whether it's getting paved roads or whether or not it's the tax you pay when you go to the grocery store. Those things are all political.
Absolutely. And the interconnectedness is very easy to illustrate to the extent that the minimum wage affects how much money certain people have and whether or not they can afford to buy a car and whether or not if they can't or can't afford to buy a car or whether or not the price of the TTC, for example, or other mm-hmm. modes of transportation are important and whether or not the roads are in good shape in the winter and everything. All of these things are all connected. So it seems complex. And a lot of people, I think, disengage because they think, oh, boy, how am I going to comprehend all of this? But it's not – that's the big mistake. You don't need to comprehend all of it. What you need to do is comprehend the part of it which applies to you. The rest you can get to if you decide to go on further. But first, pay attention to the laws that affect what money you make and what laws – you know, how many times – how likely it is that you're going to be arrested or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I do criminal law, for example. Everybody should look at the criminal code, pay attention to the criminal code, understand mm-hmm. Bill C-51, which is coming up as a big election issue because it deals with a whole bunch of security and privacy issues. These all everybody's affected by whether or not your telephone conversations are being recorded and sent to the United States. So get engaged, and you don't have to have a degree. You don't have to be bright. You don't have to be anything. The mm-hmm. ordinary person who doesn't know anything educationally can be very, very quickly well informed about what's going on in politics and become a political expert in a week. So,
well, Rob, what does political engagement mean for you?
I think political engagement for me is when we start talking about the people who are apathetic, who don't want to go out and vote, who don't want to hear conversations like the one we're having right now, or don't want to read the newspapers, or are not interested in what are the issues, whether those are local issues, whether they're national issues, provincial issues. And I think that's the thing that we worry about. In 2011, we had a 61% turnout. Only 14 million out of 24 million people voted in 2011. And that's Statistics Canada. So that would be
which
the last
time. Which
was
still pretty high numbers, actually.
And it's gone down since then.
Yeah.
So I that's the thing that I think we're talking about here is we're talking about, you know, people going out and marking that ballot in a meaningful way and being part of the process, not just standing back from it.
Well, absolutely. And one of the things, I mean, Prime Minister Harper talked about the friends last one of his speeches recently. He talked about his friends, neighbors, his friends, family, and neighbors. He referred to them as friends. And these are the people that are going to help get conservatives elected. These are the people who are going to go knocking on doors for a candidate. These are the people who are going to do phone calling for a candidate. And really, that is political engagement. That's telling people who are otherwise in their day-to-day lives unengaged in the process. That's saying to them, you can make a difference. You can become, by becoming politically engaged to that level, which is for a lot of people a lot, you know, going door to door for a candidate is something that, you know, a lot of people don't think about unless they're an active member of any particular political party. But you don't have to be a member of a party to volunteer to knock on doors for a candidate.
But is it really being engaged at that level? I mean, you think back in the mid-1970s, we're talking about 80% involvement in an election. Mm-hmm. And what I think we're talking about here is democracy. Does the engine of democracy function properly? Or as we hear some people talk about, is there a democratic deficit? In other words, are we not having a proper functioning democracy that allows everybody to have a voice and mm-hmm. to be heard mm-hmm. and to be engaged in the process. That's what we're talking about, I hope.
Well, the Democratic deficit, is that simply a matter of politicians not listening and being disengaged from the electorate and doing what they want to do? I mean, we saw that with the Chrétien government, not to the same extent as the current government, but we saw that where it was sort of a top-down situation where the leader of the party basically told everybody else how it was going to roll out. And they didn't really leave a lot of room for conversation. Now, we know this guy, the current PM, really hasn't had any room at all for people that weren't necessarily on his agenda. That, in my opinion, has led to a serious democratic deficit or deficit in our democracy, first and foremost. What do you think, Colin?
I absolutely agree. And without trying to – well, maybe I should start the Dave and Rob fan club, because I've been on the show before and I keep on saying that talk radio is the answer to that problem. In my opinion, you do have a big problem with democracy as it's supposed to be operating now, because people don't understand what's going on because they're not engaged in discussions like this. They are all intimidated. The vast majority of them are intimidated by what they see as complex issues. They're not complex. You can sit down with your buddies around a table at a bar and you can discuss all of these issues if you just do a little bit of reading and start to engage and stop just talking about the Maple Leafs. So I think that talk radio can help people get involved so we can take democracy back. The problem is this voting is not very helpful if you don't know what you're voting for and you don't know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So that's that you can have everybody in the world vote and still have a ridiculous outcome because nobody knew what they were doing.
Right.
But if you have people who know what they're doing, then the whole situation changes and people mm-hmm. can get up to speed very easily through things like talk radio, in my mm-hmm. opinion.
Well, it's interesting, too, though. When we talk about this, three-quarters of seniors voted in the last election, and they've done this repeatedly for the last 10 elections. I mean, seniors tend to turn out. Where we seem to have most of the deficit is with young people, millennials, with people under 30, and then it comes up a little bit more. People between 30 and 45, you see a little bit more participation. But I think there's a real skewedness in how people are, when we talk about being engaged, it seems to me that there's one demographic that seems to care and is prepared to go out and to mark a ballot. And then there's another group that doesn't. And I think that's what we need to start talking about, is how do we get those people interested? And I think one way is when politicians start addressing issues that are relevant to young people. And so what are those issues in our community?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's a great point. And we're going to take a quick break because that's a great spot to break on. And we're going to come back and we're going to talk about what it is. What does politics mean at the local level and what some of the candidates are proposing? You're listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. We'll be right back after this break. And welcome back to The Drive Time, everybody. We do have a caller online, and thank you very much for giving us a quick call. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff you're saying I agree to a certain extent with. I think age plays a big part of people's attitude.
Why do you think that, Ed?
Because older Canadians remember what Canada used to be. Okay, they remember the way it used to be, what we had before. I'm on different, run with different people. You know, the hockey team, the hot rod guys, the political people, and all kinds of different walks of life. I see people. The common thing is, the older people seem to remember and know how important voting is.
Mm-hmm.
The ones from say 55 down to 45, they don't care. Okay, they're not the ones who are engaged.
That's my group, Ed.
Well, most of the ones that I talk to that I see, like the guys on the hockey team, the guys in the hot rod site, that particular group is the one that goes, hey, they're all the same.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about how our opposition parties had no voice. That's the way they feel. There's no voice. What's the point? It's all the same thing. Then you get... Where we disagree, I think, is in the younger people. I think the younger people up to their 30s are very engaged in what's going on. It's their future. They know it. They're the ones that are suffering mm-hmm. through no jobs, all this other stuff. they're the ones that are really getting the work. The ones that bother me are the ones in the middle between their 30s and 50s. I don't know what kind of political leaders they're going to make. I don't know what, you know, what their apathy is going to be. Mm-hmm. That's just where it seems to me to be the problem.
Well, it's funny, too, because there have been a lot of reports out about how there's been a significant group of people who are just disengaged. And one of the things that we see is that they may be disengaged from the federal process, but they're very active. You know, they're active in parent associations. You know,
exactly.
They're active in you know, social justice issues. You know, we just have to look at the Greenwood Coalition here locally to see the activity from a social justice perspective. So we know that people are politically engaged, but they're disconnecting their engagement from the overall picture and focused more on a more local or grassroots aspect, because as you say, they don't feel as though their voice is being heard.
Well, if you look at us either federally or provincially,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't matter what party it is. Call them conservatives, call them liberals. Mm-hmm. Now, some people are more politically astute than others and know that this guy is, he calls himself a liberal, but he's actually a red Tory or, you know, mm-hmm. whatever you want to go that way. A lot of people don't get that, okay? They don't understand that. As far as they're concerned, a liberal is a liberal, whether it's federal, political, NDP is the same thing. And if you mix all the parties up and it doesn't seem to make any difference,
mm-hmm.
if they all annoy you or they all seem to, you know, go against what you want, then I can see where they would be, you know, what do you call it, disenfranchised? You know.
Right. Well, you know, the original Westminster model for parliament was that you would elect a member of parliament and then those parliamentarians would decide among themselves who they could best work with in terms of creating a government. And that's how governments were formed. It wasn't a party system at all. Rob, you have something to say?
Yeah, I was just going to say it's interesting what you're saying, Ed, because some of the factors that Statistics Canada finds are things like age is a factor. Education is a factor and wealth is a factor. So if I am less wealthy, I tend to be less engaged. If I'm less educated, I tend to be less engaged. If I'm of a certain age group, as you've started to describe, I tend to be less engaged. So those seem to be the three major factors that affect people's engagement when it comes to voting.
Exactly. And like I said before, I firmly believe that older Canadians remember what Canada used to be,
mm-hmm.
the way it used to be. I mean, we had the CBC, which told us how things were in Vancouver and in the Northwest Territories and on the East Coast. We got letters to our door. You know, this is the way we used to be, you know, and everybody was happy. Now, not so much, you know. Like,
Have you always voted, Ed?
Always, yeah.
You've never got to vote. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Colin, you have something you want to respond?
Yeah. Ed, I hear what you're saying. I find it very interesting. I'm in the 45 to 55 group?
55
you're talking
to
about?
40? Good luck,
man. He ages backwards.
Yeah, really?
Okay, let me give you my age. I'm about to turn 56, so you'd put me in the group that doesn't remember what Canada used to be like. Is that right?
That's what I'm drawing from it, okay? Like, I can only say, you know, if I'm running with different groups and it seems to be the same age group of people that are in similar situations, you know, telling everybody they got to vote and all that kind of stuff, that's what seems to me to be the, you know, the thing, whereas I find the younger ones, that's relative, right? I find the younger ones seem to be more of the idea of, there's nothing I can do about it. None of them are the same, so I'm not going to waste my time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with you, because a lot of the people around my age group and younger basically will respond to a question, are you planning to vote, by saying that conservatives are basically just the same as the liberals, but then their position is that voting for the NDP is a waste of time, and then when you get to the Green Party, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you're just throwing your vote away. So if the federal liberals and the federal conservatives are just the same, what difference does it make?
Right.
Now, my position is that definitely isn't the case, and it takes some homework. It takes some looking at the issues to conclude that that's not the case. That's an oversimplification. However, I can understand, because the country has gone downhill, I agree with you, in the last few decades, people are just too busy to read reams and reams and reams of propaganda to try and figure out what's going on, which gets me right back.
Absolutely, yeah. They've got to... they got to do like a comic headline, a YouTube video or something like that, that, you know, quickly gets to the point. It's like my son says. He says if any of these posts are more than three lines long, they don't even bother looking at them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't even read them, you know.
I said earlier in the show, and I keep on saying, that live talk radio is really the only place that I think you'll ever get people, while they're sitting in their car and they have a few seconds, or if they tune in, to actually listen. And so you have to have people prepared to discuss and provide information so that the debate can be elevated and so people can understand that, yes, in fact, the federal conservatives are not just the same as the liberals. It may very well be that the NDP is a waste of a vote. Who knows? But you need to look into it a little further. And I think that talk radio and people like yourself, it's people like yourself who will call in who are concerned and have, you know, nothing to gain in terms of, you know, fame and fortune out of it, that have to carry the ball.
You want to make sure that you want to make sure that you try and talk to the people around you. And it's so hard when they're all going, you know, I don't make any difference. I think we need to get proportional representation in here in some form or another, so that other parties like the Green Party, or whichever one you choose, like that, I don't care, the Rhinoceros Party for all that matters.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else gets a voice, and maybe we can get some independents in there, so that, you know. I don't know that a coalition isn't a bad thing, you know. You get some. That's just where I'm at. I'd like to see.
I'm going
to
vote for you, Ed. You got a point, Rob?
Yeah, I was going to say, Ed. I also think too that, you know, when politicians talk about issues, they talk about the economy, but what does that mean? There's so many aspects to that, and I think that's where people get disenfranchised. Is, you know, they try to make, we get dictated to about what are the issues, and you know, you follow the media coverage over the last 3-4 days, and we're being told this is an issue and this is an issue, and it seems to me like why do I care about the home tax credit? I don't know if I have enough money to renovate my home, and it's hard to relate to something like that. And when they talk about these things, are they really talking about the issues that matter to us? And I think that, you know, just following up on what Colin says, you know, what are the issues locally that matter? You know, are we talking about precarious labor, where people can't find full-time jobs with benefits so that they can afford to, you know, buy a car or have a home, or, you know, just live a normal life?
Mm-hmm.
You know, those kinds of things. You know, what are the issues in Northumberland? I mean, Ed, what do you think are the local issues that really people should be talking about?
We got to talk about taxes somehow, because no matter what group is taxing you, there's one taxpayer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, whether I'm paying, you know, like, okay, the Fed's got to, they download to the province. The provinces download to the municipalities. It all comes out of my property tax. You know, you get to a point where these things are unsustainable. What do we do about the cost of police coverage? I don't hear anybody talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's,
you
know, a municipal issue, Ed.
That's what's, I'm sorry?
That's a municipal issue. What about federal issues?
Federal issues, I would go with like some of these trade issues. I think we got to protect ourselves a little bit more, and not give away the farm every time we turn around. I mean, there, the last thing I read in the newspaper was CBC and the post office was up for grabs on this Pacific Rim trade deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we're not allowed to have our own post office because some Japanese company wants to do it, or some Korean company, or whatever it is. Like, that's not right. I mean, we got to have our own, protect mm-hmm. our own interests here. And I think we really, federally, the most important thing to me, I think, is in that vein. You know, I'm a real staunch supporter of the CBC. I think it's what holds Canada together, and that may be why Harper wants to get rid of it.
That could be a good point. Yeah. But on your point of taxation, though, and this is something I've been harping on for the last couple of weeks, I mean, right now, the average Canadian worker, whether he's an entrepreneur and pays that way or is getting payroll tax deductions, in Ontario, they're paying about 27%. That's in the lowest end of the tax spectrum. Now, of course, of that, only 5% is provincial, okay? The bulk of that is federal. But what we're seeing is we've got a government right now that has their tax regime as individuals pay the freight, just like in municipal politics, where ratepayers pay the freight at the municipal level. They're now we've got a system where workers are paying the bulk of the tax freight. You know, we essentially have a system where employees are actually subsidizing their own jobs because corporate taxes are half of what the average worker pays. That is something that we can address. That's something that needs to be talked about.
There's so many tax issues. There's, mm-hmm. there's also all kinds of other things that are going on.
Are you happy to pay taxes, though, Ed? I mean, if
I like my roads. I like the police department. I like the fire department.
You like the hospitals and the
schools. I like the hospitals. I like all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like billion-dollar, what do they call them, doggles?
Boondoggles.
Boondoggles,
yes. Yeah.
Okay? I don't like $100 million studies on such and such a thing, and then they say, "Oh, forget it. That man, that's money that could build a school, many schools."
Mm-hmm.
You know why? This is you want to talk about people getting fed up with politicians when they waste in the millions of dollars mm-hmm. and just slough it off as nothing, and everybody else is running around trying to get
trying to pay their hydro
bucks to pay the hydro bill.
Yep.
How do you expect people to be able to? Glean onto that. You know, it's impossible.
Well, those are some really good points, Ed. And again, a lot of that is provincial or municipal. But the reality is, as I said earlier at the beginning of the show, this is about the holistic political experience, right?
Well,
all of these things are
because the feds are downloading everything.
Well, that's it. That's the problem that a lot of people have and didn't really grasp. The same thing in Ontario. I mean, the downloading is fine as long as they download the money necessary to cover those programs.
Exactly.
But if they just download the program and don't provide the funding necessary to cover it, then
and
they're
then tell me they're saving me, mm-hmm. $50 million. Mm-hmm. So, like, okay.
Well, I want to thank you for your call, Ed.
No problem.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Bye.
By the way, folks, the lines are open at 905-372-2321. If you want to give us a call like Ed, be a part of the process, get politically engaged. You can engage with us this afternoon. And we are live to air, though. We're going to take another quick break, but we'll be right back with more of our conversation on political engagement here on Northumberland 89.7. My guests are Colin Brown and Rob Washburn. We'll see you after a few minutes. And welcome back to the Drive Time here on Northumberland 89.7. Now, Ed White, who was our caller there, just there, by the way, raised a lot of really important questions. But he raised a question in your mind, Colin. And
yes. Well, I asked over the break, who is Ed White and how did he become so apparently well-informed and so engaged? I mean, the topic we've got here is political engagement. Ed sounds like somebody who is engaged. I gather from what I've learned now that he's not a PhD in political science, that this is a guy who has taken an interest in the issues himself, is self-educated, and now he knows what he's saying and has some opinions and can talk intelligently. And the point I was trying to make earlier is that that is not difficult to do. You do not need to have specialized political education in order to look at the issues that affect you, that you care about, and now, especially with the Internet, to go on the Internet and get yourself up to speed. But the question is, then what do you do with that information? And I get right back to, in my opinion, you have to have a forum where people can get together and discuss this in mm-hmm. a way that they are doing it live and they're listening to each other and the issues are, the important things are being said. Up until talk radio and this kind of local stuff, we're all being bombarded by the big political television stage debates, which help not at all. That's not really helpful. This kind of thing is helpful, and in my opinion, people should take Ed's lead and get up to speed. Let's hash it out.
And there's many ways to get informed, too. I mean, it's rather timely. Tomorrow, Jon Stewart's last Daily Show is going to be aired. And there was a man who, for a very long time, has used humor and satire mm-hmm. to educate people about issues in the news. And some people will even argue that he probably did a better job than some of the mainstream news networks did in keeping people informed. Rick Mercer does the same kind of thing through his comedy. Helps educate people about what's going on. So, I mean, it's not a matter, it doesn't have to be that you sit down with the Globe and Mail or the National Post every morning and pile drive through front to back to be well informed. I think it's a matter of, there's many, many ways that we can become mm-hmm. informed about what's going on, and that allows us to have the kind of intelligent conversation. I read a really good article in Time about Stewart and his last show, and they were saying that, you know, his whole goal was to present an air of reasonableness, that we can talk about things without having to be extremist so argumentative that it defeats the purpose of whole good, solid discussion. You know, and I think that's very, very important.
Well, I think it goes, in my opinion anyway, it goes back to one of the fundamentals that we learned in life, which is there are no stupid questions. The only dumb questions are the ones that aren't asked, the ones that that aren't asked, rather. And that's really what it comes down to. That's what political engagement is. It's being willing to ask questions, to be willing to not just accept things the way they are, not willing to accept that these are the issues. It's the economy, it's healthcare, it's staying the course, it's whatever it is. I mean, the issues politically are the issues that affect us every day. You know, income inequality, income security. You know, the point I was making earlier about, you know, what, in my opinion, the fact that workers are now, in fact, subsidizing their own jobs. And I believe that. I believe that 100% because, you know, that's what we see. And that is an issue. But, you know, you're not going to hear about that in a 30-second soundbite or a commercial from any of the political parties, because it's as though they don't want you to think. They don't want you to know what the right questions to ask are. So it really is up to us to determine through either what they're telling us or what they're not telling us what that question is.
All right. That's a nice point for me to jump in with this and sort of getting a little heavier here with our little discussion. The term oligarchy is a term that a lot of people might not recognize if they didn't do some political study, but it means basically that you are a bunch of people where the ultra-wealthy control you when you're basically being, shall we say, taken advantage of by a small group of very, very wealthy people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether or not you think that Canada is one or not, well, you can look into that yourself. However, that sets up a situation where people don't feel comfortable asking a lot of questions. There's questions that you feel that are taboo. You're all brought up being told discussing politics at the dinner table is taboo. Well, discussing politics at church is taboo. Well, discussing politics when you're at the beach is taboo. So there's like no place where discussing politics isn't taboo. Well, that's a setup. So basically, since politics affects you all, discuss politics wherever you want, at any time, get up to speed, and look into all these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned oligarchy, and that's, you know, everyone refers to Vladimir Putin and his reign in Russia as essentially an oligarchy, where they've got a handful of people who own all the oil companies and the major resource companies in Russia, rather, and they dictate to the people. But what we have here in North America, and you know, you've heard the term New World Order, we've got what is essentially a corporatocracy. We've got a situation now where it's not just a handful of really wealthy people. It's the large multinational corporations. And everyone's going, oh, he's going to beat up on the corporations again. But the reality is, you know, and I got to admit, I've watched The Corporation again. I've had to watch it. And I urge people to watch that as often as possible, because there are a lot of things that one can glean from that documentary. And it's not just about the big, bad corporations. It's also about corporations who are willing to accept the fact that some of their behavior does have a negative impact. And some of those CEOs are willing to say, you know what, we're not going to do this anymore because of the negative impact. But the corporatocracy, for the most part, only cares about the bottom line, and their bottom line is what is best for their shareholders. And if Canada is, in fact, a corporatocracy, which I believe we're rapidly becoming, then that would mean that Canada itself should be the largest corporation in that corporatocracy, and that we as voters and citizens of Canada are in fact shareholders. So who's going to act in our best interest? We've got trade deals right now that we're negotiating that have investor protection clauses in them, state investor protection clauses, which allow companies to sue governments if they write legislation that undermines their ability to earn a profit. But what about the shareholders of Canada? What about the residents of Canada? Who's looking after our best interest?
And there's another aspect to this as well that I think builds on what you guys are talking about, and that is this notion of the spiral of silence,
mm-hmm.
Which was originally proposed in 1974 by Elizabeth Noel Newman. And it talks about people who don't carry the same dominant ideas as the rest of society, and they're afraid to talk out about things that are alternative or are different. And therefore, we feel, you know, mainstream media sets out the agenda for, you know, what we're going to discuss. Political parties set out an agenda for what we're going to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, corporations, the wealthy, set out the agendas. And we're supposed to just bounce along and say, yes, these are the things that are supposed to be important. And where do those other voices come from? You know, people who are poor. They don't have a voice. Mm-hmm. Or people who, you know, don't want to disagree, they're afraid to disagree because, well, that's not what everybody else says. And mm-hmm. yet they might hold views that a lot of people might hold if they were just given an opportunity. So what happens is we get this ongoing, and the more people that stay silent, again, mm-hmm. more people don't talk, more people don't talk, more people don't talk. It was used, the case study was Germany pre-Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
And that as the things got taken over and as Hitler gained more and more power, people became more and more afraid, and therefore, mm-hmm. you know, a dictator came to power. And, you know, you begin to look at, you know, the way that the mass media is treated by political parties, where you know, people go around and we don't find out what's going on. The lack of transparency, freedom of information, all these kinds of things are slowly, we watch them, are being shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. Mm-hmm. So how do we expect people to be engaged if we can't get the information?
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, the spiral of silence makes us all feel guilty for speaking out. You know, I think those are contributing factors as well.
Well, and you talked about the isolation that a lot of people feel, the whole idea that I'm the only one going through this. And it reminds me of Alcoholics Anonymous, because before Alcoholics Anonymous was started, you had just, you know, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people who were suffering with alcoholism and believing that they were the only ones. I'm the only one. It's the same thing with victims of sexual violence. You know, people don't realize. But once you start talking to other people who are victims, whether you're an alcoholic or you're a victim of crime, and you do realize that you're not the only one, and you realize that, wait a minute, I'm not a voice in the wilderness. There are thousands of people like me out there. At that point, you see a rising up, if you will. So there has to be, and again, it's all about this interconnectedness of politics, this holistic approach to politics that I was talking about, because it's not surprising to find that parties, political parties and governments in particular, don't want people getting together. They don't want people discussing issues. They don't want people to talk about things that they don't want them to talk about. And it's those people, like people like you and I, for instance, who do this show, people who engage one another on the street. It's those people, and I that's where I use the phrase, be the elephant in the room, right? Because elephants have a long memory. And, you know, the one thing politicians hate is an elephant. They don't want to have anything to do with you if you're an elephant, because they know that you're going to bring up things that have happened that maybe shouldn't have happened. You're going to discuss issues that, you know, promises that have been made that have been broken, all of these things. And that is an aspect of political engagement. But by realizing you're not alone, I mean, that is probably the greatest gift that we can give one another, is to tell each other, hey, you know what? I know where you're going through, man. I've been here. I'm on the same page. This is what my friends and I are doing. We've got a group of people that are doing this. And at that point, you bring people in to the engagement, and that's how you draw them in.
Well, I've got an opportunity for you guys right now to help me with the problem in the same vein that you just described, because I have an actual serious question that involves the engagement, and I have been reluctant to talk about it because it even perplexes me. But before I get into that particular question, what you're saying is true. As soon as you say something that seems sort of out there, outside the box, you're labeled a radical, you're labeled a conspiracy theorist, mm-hmm. and people are terrified of these labels attaching to them. So the question really is, who is the bad guy here? Because if you're gonna get involved in politics, you know you're gonna have to find somebody you disagree with, and they're the bad guy, and you can't get away with it. You're not gonna be able to agree with everybody.
Right.
So a lot of people have demonized the corporation, and so what I'd like both of you to address for me, and this is a serious question that I really need an answer to.
Mm-hmm.
Pension plans will invest in corporations, and individuals will be shareholders in corporations.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very difficult in my analysis not to be hypocritical, to just simply label the corporation as a bad guy if you yourself are a shareholder, or if your mm-hmm. pension plan has shares mm-hmm. in corporations. So
which CPP now, I mean, the Canadian Pension Plan Investment Board, invests in very much that way. So we are all, at this
right.
point, investors in the corporate structure.
So I think it's an oversimplification to simply point a finger and say corporations mm-hmm. are bad. However, you can say, I don't like what this corporation is doing,
mm-hmm.
and I don't like what that corporation is doing. And that, again, involves looking into it a little bit further. So I think that a lot of individuals have been sucked into this myth that's so complex they couldn't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true. All of you out there, you can handle it. It's not as complex as they're trying to make it. You're being bamboozled. It's a lot easier than you think it is. take Ed's lead, and even in my case, I do practice law. I do have my degree, but I still needed to discuss this idea that the corporations can't just be labeled the bad guy, and I needed to have a forum where we can talk about this, and I couldn't do it at the dinner table.
Well, no, but here's something that most people aren't aware. Corporate charters are granted by the state. And if a business is acting, and it's the same thing if you're a private entity, if you're not an incorporated business and you do something that is illegal or you do something that undermines the social integrity, you will be held account to that. But corporations aren't held to the same account. So part of the problem for me is this idea that corporations are individuals under the law. First and foremost, I would like to get rid of that. I think that is just one of the most heinous things that ever happened was to bestow citizenship, if you will, upon corporations. Because as a citizen of a country, I'm obliged to adhere to the specific laws and provisions of that country. And if I violate those laws, I can be personally held accountable. But corporations as individuals cannot be personally held accountable. So the first thing you need to do is get rid of that. Right, you need to take away that and make them accountable, because it's like the financial crisis we just had. The reason we had that, where they got rid of Glass-Steagall. What did Glass-Steagall do? Well, it made sure that there was two separate banks. There was investment banking, and then there was private. There were individual banks. But once the two were allowed to merge, and investment banks began to focus on investments for their own sake and not worry about so much of their depositors, at that point things got a little hinky. And so what happened was, when they removed Glass-Steagall, they essentially took the brakes off. And now the car is careening down the road with no brakes. And so what you need to have are laws. And laws essentially act as a brake mechanism to ensure that your vehicle doesn't go flying off the road or careening. I mean, one of the points made by the former head of Shell Oil said, why do we have brakes on our car? And he asked his kids, why do you think we have brakes? And they said, so we can stop. He goes, no, you have brakes so you can go faster. Because if you didn't have brakes on your car, you would only be driving as careful as you possibly could, because you don't want to hit somebody because you can't stop the vehicle. But when you know you have brakes and you have the ability to stop, then you push yourself to the envelope. Getting rid of the brakes, which is what they did with Glass-Steagall, essentially allowed the cars to go off the rails, which is exactly what we saw. Because greed is the motivator of it is. That's the ultimate motivator of corporations. They call it the bottom line. They call it shareholder value. Call it what you will. It's still greed. And as long as greed is something that is cherished by a certain segment of the population, namely corporations, you're going to have a conflict. You're going to have a situation where the best interest of the country isn't necessarily the best interest of the corporation. And so under certain provisions now legally in this country, we can be sued if we write laws like that. So we need to get rid of the idea that corporations are individuals, because corporations need to be able to have the brakes. And those brakes come from personal accountability and personal liability. And I think that's probably the first thing that we need to address. Because as you said, they're not all big, bad corporations. Not every corporation out there is, polluting the waters or buying up the water and charging people ridiculous rates like they were doing down in Bolivia, for instance. The simple fact that we now have a trade deal in works right now that's going to allow American milk to be sold into Canada, which contains a bovine growth hormone that is banned in Canada because it's carcinogenic. It's not banned in the U.S. 100% of their milk has this product. If we now open up our dairy production or access to our dairy market to that under this trade agreement, we're not going to be able to stop that. So now Health Canada has to either go publicly and say, oh, our information was wrong, just like they did before with regards to gasoline additives, or say to these dairy producers in the U.S., we can't buy your milk. Sorry, it contains banned substances. Is that something we're going to do? You can only do that if you can make corporations accountable. I believe that.
I think that was brilliant. That simplifies, I think, for all the listeners. If you don't think politics is important to you, do you want to drink poisoned milk? Simple as that. Just think through that.
Exactly. Rob?
I have nothing to add to that.
So as far as political engagement locally, again, I've already put out the notice that people can volunteer with their friends, families, and neighbors and do some door-to-door knocking or maybe make some phone calls. But political engagement is just as simple as what we're doing right now, asking questions of like-minded individuals, trying to form a positive answer or an answer, even if it's not an answer you agree with, but an answer that you can move forward with, or making sure that you know what questions to ask. Don't just accept that the questions that we're asking now are the right questions. I could be completely off my head. I might be out there. I might be a lunatic. But I still have a brain, and I have the ability to ask those questions, just like each and every one of you folks out there.
We're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back with this. We're going to wrap it up here for today's show. You have been listening to Consider This Live on Northumberland 89.7. I'm your host, Dave Glover. My guests in the studio, local lawyer Colin Brown and Rob Washburn, professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. Stick around for the wrap.
About what stops people from expressing opinions. And I sometimes think that my brethren in the media carry a rather large burden with this because, you know, we get sometimes a coverage that seems to rival a horse race, mm-hmm. where it's a lot about polls and who's ahead in the polls, and somebody's ahead by 2 points and somebody's ahead by 10 points and then they're down by three. And, you know, these constant polls and they seem to dominate the coverage to a point that elections seem to be a foregone conclusion. And, mm-hmm. and then why do you want to discuss anything, or why do you want to even vote? Because, well, the polls say that Mulcair is going to win, or Trudeau's going to lose, or, you know, they're neck and neck. I think we need less of that and more of the information about what these policies are that they're proposing and how they're going to impact on us and how they're relevant. And I think you're slowly starting to see more and more of this. And I think social media is starting to play a larger role because people themselves are finding ways to communicate through social media. But I also think, too, that the media needs to be more of a facilitator of democratic engagement and public engagement, so that we do get a chance to stand on a soapbox for 5 seconds and get our ideas or our voice heard.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's some salient points, and I hope the listeners appreciate that. Now, both of these gentlemen will be back here in the studio. We haven't firmed up the dates yet, but it's a long election period. I want to thank Colin Brown for being here today and sharing some of his insights and his ideas. Rob Washburn, as always, professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. Always a pleasure to have you here too, sir. And we're going to close it off. Here's BTO, Taking Care of Business. We'll see you tomorrow, folks. Don't forget, Jim Stanford is joining me tomorrow afternoon around 4:30. Jim Stanford, the chief economist with Unifor. Yes, tomorrow.